This free program is paid for by the listeners of Redwood Community Radio. If you're not already a member, please think of joining us. Thank you.
Well, welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray.
For those of you who perhaps have never listened to our shows, which run every third Friday of the month from 7 till 8 p.m., we are both licensed medical herbalists who trained in England and graduated there with a degree in herbal medicine. We run a clinic in Garberville where we consult with clients about a wide range of conditions, and we manufacture all our own certified organic herbal extracts which are either grown on our CCUF certified herb farm or which are sourced from other USA certified organic suppliers. So you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM, and from 7:30 until the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in with any questions either related or unrelated to this month's subject of energetic interactions of ionizing and non-ionizing radiations. So the number here if you live in the area is 923-3911, or if you live outside the area, a toll-free number, there's 1-800-568-3723 or 1-800-KMUD-RAD. And we can also be reached toll-free on 1-888-WBM-HERB for further questions during normal business hours Monday through Friday. And we're also once again very pleased to welcome Dr. Ray Peake to the show to share his knowledge on the subject and to offer alternative strategies for maintaining rather good health. So by the term non-ionizing radiation, we mean that type of radiation that doesn't carry enough energy to ionize atoms or molecules, that is to remove an electron from them, whereas the ionizing has a sufficiently high energy basically to remove electrons and basically damage DNA, etc. So even the non-ionizing types are certainly under question.
And so can you give us some examples of non-ionizing and ionizing radiation?
Yeah, well, the non-ionizing types would be things like radio waves, microwaves, up to the infrared. And then the ionizing types would be ultraviolet radiation from the sun, for example, X-rays and gamma rays and that kind of stuff. And they're the ones that really damage DNA. Whereas the non-ionizing radiation per se doesn't damage DNA, but definitely has excitatory effects that can be very damaging. And a recent article published in Science Daily, November 13th, 2012, reports that even low-level radioactivity is damaging, and even the very lowest levels of radiation are harmful to life. So the scientists concluded this at the Cambridge Philosophical Society's journal, The Biological Review. And they reported that the results of a wide-ranging analysis of 46 peer-reviewed studies published over the past 40 years, researchers from the University of South Carolina and the University of Paris South found that variation in low-level natural background radiation was found to have small but highly statistical significant negative effects on DNA as well as several other measures of health. So no levels of radiation are safe.
I've heard plenty of doctors tell me directly that you can withstand a certain amount of radiation and it's perfectly harmless, like a certain number of chest x-rays per year, a certain number of dental x-rays, but John Goffman disproved that already, and now some more research is coming out saying that no level is safe. There's no threshold at which there's no negative effect beneath.
So the levels have continually come down from post-war units to the present date. They definitely have come down quite significantly, but obviously there's still measurable differences in exposure. Okay, so I don't know if we've got Dr. Pete actually on the show at the moment, if he's still being contacted or not. Let me just see if he is. No, I guess he doesn't. Okay. All right, well, until we can get Dr. Pete on the line, we'll just continue what we have here, although much of what we've got is... We've got no choice. Okay, what's happening then? Okay, all right. So I guess until we have Dr. Pete joining us, the main things we wanted to talk about were the effects of non-ionizing radiation and that the recent research showing that no levels are safe, and how the radiation interferes with cell processes, and the excitation that occurs can be mediated in part, or the effects can be in part reduced by the substances like pregnenolone, progesterone, testosterone, in fact, also has a similar effect, and that other hormones that were definitely associated with inflammation, things like estrogen, are particularly damaging because they have a very potentiating effect to what would normally be experienced by the organism. Estrogen itself is actually a significant magnifier of the negative effects. So much of the environmental pollution that's happened over the last 50 years with plastics and the petrochemical industry, etc.
And radiation.
Yeah, and of course the radiation testing that's happened since the 50s. All of this has been a major burden to us as organisms. And also the other thing I think that we'll try and bring out later on in the show is that the science of photobiology, where science is now looking at light as a very significant player in the role of good health, and that I know we brought out in past shows that red light has a significant free radical quenching effect. And I know Dr. Peter's been a pretty big proponent of red light, and there's been plenty of studies to show that the free radical quenching effects of red light can have very significant effects to prevent cancers, etc. So I don't know if you have Dr. Pete on the line. He is. Good.
I was hearing the first part of what you said, but you couldn't hear me.
Okay.
And then I missed the second part.
Okay. We're very, very happy to have you with us, Dr. Pete. I think, as usual, there's always a group of people, perhaps, who've never listened to the show before. So I'm sure they would definitely benefit from hearing your academic background in regards to what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Oh, okay. From 1968 to 72, I studied biology, reproductive physiology, and biochemistry at the University of Oregon for a PhD. But my first teaching job was 1959-1960, and the main course was called Physics for Biology Majors, and the main content of that had to do with the interactions of radiant energy with matter. And so it covered things like photosynthesis and nuclear fallout, sunburn, and so on. All the ways in which radiant energy can interact with matter was a big part of the course. And before that, I had been following the government's doctrines about the safety of the fallout from atomic bomb tests. Mm-hmm. And just about the same time, the government was... They found that in the Navy, some people were injured or killed by working around radars, and that got me interested in the effects of microwave radar frequencies. They found that if the wavelength was similar to the diameter of the person's head, they could be very quickly killed as their brain overheated. And in experiments, they found that that same frequency wouldn't kill animals with a small brain. Huh. at the same level of exposure because it was a matter of resonance
right.
with the properties and size of the animal's head or the organ so that particular organs could be overheated according to the wavelength.
So this is the excitation that the non-ionizing form of radiation produces.
Yeah, and the U.S. government policy was based very largely on the work of Hermann Schwann, who was brought over from Nazi Germany to work for the government explaining the safety of microwave and radar waves. And he knew that the brain could be cooked by overexposure and that technicians sometimes would heat up their hot dogs by putting them in the radar, in front of the radar antenna.
Uh-huh.
And so he argued that he wasn't a biologist at all. He was a physicist. And he argued that that was the only danger from radar or microwaves was if it heated you up. And so he found that to heat up a beaker of salt water noticeably, it required sitting in front of the radar for at least an hour at an intensity of around 100,000 microwatts per square centimeter. And so just to be safe, he and the government said that we'll set the safety limit at 10,000 microwatts per square centimeter.
Okay.
But meanwhile, or earlier, the Soviets had been having technicians get sick working around radar, and so they did experiments to find out what the safe level was, and they determined that only 10 microwatts should be allowed for technicians and only 1 microwatt per square centimeter for the general public exposure.
Well, that's a big difference from 10,000 from the beaker water experiment.
Yeah.
So where were the Russians testing humans and the Nazi German in America was testing water, beakers of water?
Yeah. And the government knew about the dangers of microwave radiation just as well as they knew about the dangers of radioactive fallout. But over the decades, they would fire employees who exposed the dangers of microwaves.
Right.
And so until just about 20 years ago, that same 10,000 microwatt standard was recognized. And now it's down, I think, to about 1,000 microwatts.
Okay, yeah, the recent November 13th article stating that the even the very lowest levels of radiation were harmful to life. What do you have to say about that in terms of the non-ionizing sources? I think we'll get into the non-ionizing radiation, talk a little bit more specifically about that and how that can be ameliorated or how we can do things to avoid exposure or lessen the exposure.
There are reasons to think, based on good evidence, that the lower limits of interference with life are produced at much, much lower power levels than anything that people are now worried about.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one study found that brain electrical activity could resonate with a field, if it was tuned properly, with a field with an energy of only 1/1,000,000,000 of a microwatt.
Wow.
Just an incredible difference. And
This interaction there may not necessarily be harmful, but just to say that even at that level, there was an interaction.
Yeah, something is happening.
Yeah.
And in animal experiments, they know that they can interfere with the orientation of bees and pigeons, homing pigeons.
Okay.
Because to get lost if they put a magnet on them.
Because they're using electromagnetic fields to guide themselves, aren't they?
Yeah.
Or pigeons, for sure.
When the sun is obscured by clouds, they rely on magnetic fields. Uh-huh. Otherwise, they use the sun.
Yeah.
And salamanders, I think, are about 100 times more sensitive to the fields.
Wow.
And snails, there have been many studies through the 50s and 60s of the ability of organisms to sense these extremely weak environmental fields and resonances. In the 50s and 60s, for example, human studies done by the, I think it was the CIA, found that if you shield a person from the Earth's resonant, very, very small electromagnetic activity, the brain waves become disorganized. In other words, normal alpha rhythms and similar brain oscillations in the 7 to 12 cycle frequencies.
Okay.
These are getting their cue from the Earth's resonance of the same frequency.
Wow. Now, when they talk about, you talked about beta. In sleep, there's a theta wave, I think that's about 12 cycles per second, that is associated, no, not sleep, theta is thought, isn't it? When people are thinking about things and they're focusing, that's the general well-being and thought-based brainwave. And then there's the beta is the sleep one, isn't it? I think that was the 7 cycle that you were talking about.
If you drive the brain with a signal that is larger than the Earth's resonant frequency, you can cause the brain to adjust its cycling. Or if you simply put a person in a cave, isolated from the Earth, with a metal shielding around them, all of their systems become desynchronized, where normally each organ and system coordinates with the others. When you interfere with it, the whole body loses its coordination. So the monthly cycles get out of phase with the daily cycles, and those with the more frequent hourly rhythms and so on. So the something that interferes with our sensing of the Earth's rhythms can have all of these effects on, for example, menstruation, fertility, even mental clarity, causing insomnia, loss of ability to concentrate. And I think the mental effects are probably already being seen. Michael Persinger, in a video that's on the internet called No More Secrets, he mentions that the abnormal, very common, rare experiences, extrasensory perception and such, are tending to disappear from society. People aren't having those interesting experiences anymore. And he thinks it's because of the pollution, which is, while the brain energy, the oscillation of our nerve cells and such, is just about at the same level of energy as the natural oscillations of the Earth's magnetic field, the pollution is thousands or millions of times more intense. So even though our brains can tune in and select to a great extent these very weak fields, the body is being influenced by this junk, which is coming in at all kinds of frequencies.
Yeah. Okay. Well, welcome this month's Ask Your Web Doctor. We're very pleased to have Dr. Raymond Peake join us on the show tonight from 7:30 till the end of the show. People can either call in with questions related or unrelated to this month's subject of the energetic interactions with reference to non-ionizing as well as ionizing radiation. The number here, if you live in the area, is 923-3911, or if you live outside the area, the number's 1-800-KMUD-RAD. So, Dr. Peake, getting back to the cycles that you were talking about, obviously, as human beings, I think most thinking people recognize that we are pretty complex creatures and that we've very much grown fairly interwoven with the environment in which we live, and we are definitely affected to a large degree by our environment and how we damage it can also have effects straight back at us. So you were mentioning the Earth's natural magnetic field. Did you say it was six cycles a second?
There are various parts of it. One important one is 10 or 11. Another important one is 6 or 7.
Okay. So am I right in thinking that the most power transmission stations are also running power at the same kind of frequency? Is that?
Yeah, the standard house current at 60 cycles per second.
60, right.
Is close enough to our common oscillations that it can have a very big effect. In Europe, it's 50 cycles per second rather than 60.
Okay.
And those are known to affect the rate of cell division, the rate of developing blood vessels, and so on. So if you use them in the right context, you can stimulate the growth of a broken bone or the revascularization of an injured tissue. But if it's just happening at random, it is known to increase the incidence of cancer, for example, promoting growth when it shouldn't. And many other kinds of biological disorganization, for example, Alzheimer's disease and ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Okay.
Those are very well connected with the circuits, level of electromagnetic energy that lots of workers are exposed to, for example, from sewing machines.
Okay.
The incidence of Alzheimer's disease is 3 times higher among people who work with machinery like that.
Wow. So do you think that's like industrial sewing machines?
The home sewing machines are very similar.
So this is because of the motor. You're talking about electric sewing machines now, I presume.
Yeah.
Okay. So presumably the motor is generating fields sufficiently strong enough to interact in a negative way.
And the rhythm is governed by the speed of the motor.
Okay.
And so you get these rhythms that are on the order of our own native rhythm from a few per second up to maybe 100 per second.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, what other common household appliances have there been studies done showing an interaction, a negative interaction with EMF and human biology?
You probably remember the thing about electric blankets about 10 or 15 years ago causing cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And even electric clocks, having one near your head while you sleep is probably harmful. And
My little digital clock that I've had since I was probably 15 is reads danger when I put the EMF reader to it.
Really?
Yeah.
And one of the strongest things around the house is the fluorescent tube or fluorescent compact bulb.
Uh-huh.
Laptops are another danger on the EMF reader.
Well, what other things, Dr. Peake, that you're aware of?
Electric shavers are connected with brain tumor.
Electric shavers. Wow.
What about those sonic toothbrushes?
I haven't seen a study of that, but and hair dryers and electric shavers are definitely connected.
Okay, so it's all to do with how close it's getting to your head, right?
Yeah.
So this goes strengthens the argument that cell phone use can lead to some cerebral tumors because of being very close to your head in proximity for both duration and intensity.
About 40 years ago, there was at one of the big electronic companies, there were a few people in a lab working with essentially a big dynamo sort of thing that had a pulsating magnetic field.
Uh-huh.
And within just a few months of each other, two of these employees developed and died from an astrocytoma.
Wow.
A very uncommon kind of brain tumor.
Yeah.
And brain tumors are probably the most common cancer other than leukemia.
Because going back to leukemia, Dr. Pete, the incidence is very statistically significant with children born contracting leukemia that are localized around high-tension power lines.
Clusters
of them occurring.
Any kind of a power line is a risk, but those very powerful ones, I think it's especially within 100 meters of the power line, it's very dangerous.
Yeah, now, I remember in England, unfortunately, I think because of space or whatever it is, but I remember it's fairly common in certain urban areas in England to see these electrical pylons carrying high-tension voltage to be in people's back gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also
right
associated with people living underneath those high-tension power lines have a higher incidence of multiple sclerosis.
Now
And radio and television broadcasting towers are major dangers within a half a mile.
Wow.
You can get into the toxic field strength.
So if somebody lives in the city and they live near a radio or a broadcast or a telephone company, what would you recommend they do if it's like put metal roofing on and the grounds?
I think if I lived near a power line or a telephone company headquarters, I would have a metal roof and probably some metal screens connecting between the roof and some of the plumbing that's well grounded.
Okay. All right. I think what we're trying to bring out, I think, more than anything else with this this show tonight, Dr. Pete, and I'm sure you'd agree with it, is that information is a valuable resource, and that whilst in our society in 2012, it's the best we can do in terms of using these fields, etc., for communication or whatever else we're using. It's at this point, it's the best option that we have. But I know you're very interested in light, and in terms of communication, obviously fiber optics jump out as a means of transmitting data via light. And I wonder that anything can be done to further that, to prevent what we have at the moment is a kind of next best thing that we're dealing with in this technological stage that we're at with our communications.
I think as people become more conscious of the seriousness of the question, I think the pressure will force the rapid development of fiber optics and at least having other ways to communicate with electricity and electromagnetics.
I know in major cities, etc., in Europe, and I'm sure it's probably the same in the States, but that most major cities have fiber optic backbones running in a ring or in a grid through the city that will be a conduit for data transmission.
I think we have a caller on the line, or maybe not.
We actually lost them, but somebody else called in to say that the best way to protect yourself from the EMFs is to take the example of the Salmon Creek beaver and cut the poles down.
Okay. All right. So getting back to some research articles surrounding the effects of EMF, Dr. Pete, I know you'd mentioned Alzheimer's, and I think amyloid, wasn't amyloid deposition a significant factor in, or am I thinking of something different? I think
The microwaves are able to very quickly increase the beta amyloid that's characteristic of Alzheimer's disease.
Right, okay. There is
so
good.
The mechanisms, at least partly, are known, as well as the fact that there's a strong association between exposure and the sickness.
Yeah. Okay. It's not too big a stretch, is it, I think, for most people listening at this point in time to understand that as organisms interacting with our planet, what we've been exposed to in the last 100 years or so is probably never, we were never probably meant to, well, I say we probably were never meant to be exposed to it, but it's certainly having a pretty big impact on us, and obviously our best interest is to try and work it out and deal with it. So in terms of the effects of non-ionizing radiation and the way our brains, you said our brains are interacting with our environment, with our planet, because we're born of this planet and this planet resonates at a certain frequency. As beings of light, perhaps that's another way of looking at us. The other effects of the other radiation that are non-ionizing that we're exposed to, what do you think about the likely potential health effects?
Of light therapy?
No. I was going to ask Dr. Pete what he was. He was going to perhaps talk a little bit about the negative health effects of the electromagnetic radiation.
Oh, the very basis for the government policy ever since that 1947 to 50 study based on jars of salt water heating up. The very basis for the whole policy is the image of the organism as a bag of chemicals in water, salty water solution, an absolutely never founded model of what the organism is.
Right.
So it's a horrible fantasy idea which leads all of these corporate and government people to say,
right,
oh, there's no danger.
Right.
You're just a bag of chemicals in salt water.
Mm-hmm. And so a reductionist principle, huh?
Yeah, and that part of the problem there is that that policy is reinforcing an anti-scientific attitude in the universities and in general public understanding of what an organism is. St. Georgi was one of the early people recognizing that life is an electronic process. And Alexander Gurvitch, even 20 or 30 years before St. Georgi, was demonstrating that cells communicate through light. In the case of his experiments, it was in the ultraviolet region. But St. Georgi emphasize that resonant electrons can travel through the organism, and that opens up the possibility for these resonant interactions between other frequencies, not just the high-energy Gurvitch rays, but the very low-energy rays, which can resonate with groups of electrons that are behaving like an antenna, where the reductionist sees our cells as simply groups of atoms, each atom being the only thing which can absorb radiant energy.
Right.
The St. Georgi model is that great molecular spans integrate the cellular processes by conductive electrons.
So we are like an electrical piece of equipment.
Yeah, and in the late 1940s, two Romanians were the first ones to show coherent electronic interaction producing microwaves. They basically invented the maser, or the microwave amplification, by stimulating emission of radiation, the microwave equivalent of the laser.
Right.
And just this last summer, some Englishmen found that they could make a maser that operates at room temperature by a coherent interaction of electrons at the microwave frequency. So now the physical non-reductionist approach to matter is established, that masers do exist and can work at room temperature. So now we can go back and say St. George's thinking wasn't entirely unrealistic. He was describing the chemistry or physics of a maser operating in the organism, but now we know that it's actually a thing that can be manufactured and exist at room temperature.
Got it. Okay, we have a caller on the line, I think.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have three specific questions I want to ask. I hope they can be addressed concisely. The first thing, Dr. Pete, you just touched very simply on fluorescent light. Okay, you said that fluorescent light tubes were dangerous, and did you say that those little squiggly ones that they want us all to use instead of incandescent light bulbs, are those bad for the eyes or the nervous system?
I think for the nervous system, especially because they emit in the radio frequency and microwave frequency.
So those little squiggly fluorescent lights are related to microwaves?
They do emit, that kind of radiation.
Because they're uncomfortable to me. I don't like them. And everybody tries to tell me that they're not as bad as the long tube old-fashioned ones, and that they diffuse the light and that they're okay and that they're better than incandescent because they save energy. Now, if it saves energy, fine, but if it doesn't save the energy of the person,
it costs more energy to make
them.
What?
And the disposing of them is very energy expensive.
Exactly.
Because of the mercury in them.
So you think it's better to stick with incandescent bulbs?
Yeah, I think they're still the best answer. LEDs, maybe.
Okay. Now, my other question is, I don't have any computers or anything like that, but when I go visit my daughter, she's got all kinds of fax machines and computers and electronic stuff. And when the lights go out, and she's got a lot of these in the guest room, and when the lights go out, these lights, all these different colors, green and blue and red, lights coming from the machines are powerful and penetrating. They're disturbing to my sleep, they're disturbing to my eyes, and I end up throwing pieces of cloth over them so to cover the lights so I don't have to see them. Are those harmful?
I don't think the light itself is, but there's probably activity in the computer even when it's asleep.
Well, why does it make such pungent light when it's off?
They just have these little LEDs to indicate.
So LED lights themselves are very, very powerful?
No, I don't think the lights are especially harmful. It's
okay.
Circuitry.
Now, my other question is about microwave ovens. Do you think that microwave ovens are dangerous? I know you're supposed to not be in front of it. You push the button and get out of the way. But are they dangerous to use, and is the food bad for you that you eat this microwave?
Microwave is now pretty well shielded. In 1973, the Consumers Union recommended buying no microwave oven because they weren't properly shielded. But now if you don't stand near them and just use them for a couple minutes, they aren't one of the worst problems.
Okay, but what about the food you eat? Does it do something to the food to make it less nutritious or bad for you in any way?
No, it's basically like boiling the food.
Because I thought that it was stirred up the molecules and heated it up from the inside, and that somehow was destructive to the nutrients. That's not true?
No, it's just like boiling.
Oh.
It does heat damage, but nothing much worse.
And the other reason why the fluorescent twirly things and the fluorescent tubes are bad is because they don't emit a lot of red light, which is what incandescents do.
Yeah, they have always disturbed my nervous system and made me feel uptight around them. And people think I'm crazy.
Well, thank you very much for your call, and I hope we answered your questions.
Okay, I think we have another caller on the line, so let's take this next caller. You're on the air?
Hi there. Is that me?
It is. You're on the air.
Okay. Well, you know, this subject, I'm appreciating this show, but I'm a very long-term person with electromagnetic hypersensitivity, and I've studied this for a long, long time with some great experts in the field, and I respect your opinions very much, but you don't know the half of it, folks. And as someone who actually is a mind canary, I have to say that microwave ovens are not safe, that modern microwave ovens emit quite a heck of a lot of stuff. I have to stand, you know, like 6 to 10 feet away from all microwave ovens not to get pressure in my head. I found that out in 1990. The process of how you cook food in microwave ovens, it isn't exactly like boiling, because the process that heats it up actually does, in fact, impact what would you call it, the actual the feel of the food, the textural quality of the electromagnetic bonds in the food. But worse than that is that there's so much ignorance out there, and there's so much electromagnetic pollution because we have been kept totally in the dark because of the money, just like tobacco. And what I would urge, first of all, there is no level of radiation, ionizing or non-ionizing, that is safe. You know, you've been talking about it. It's true. And yet, there's all these women walking around with cell phones in their bras. I just read an article today about, you know, the incidence of breast cancer right where you held your cell phone. You know, and they recommend you hold it 5/8 of an inch away from your flesh. And I'm like, oh, that'll slow it down a little bit. You know, and maybe it will. But the fact is that a huge amount of damage has been done over the last, just in the last 15 years, really, this explosion of stuff. And I'm really worried, guys, because what I've looked at from almost dying from this is that, yes, you can supplement yourself with seaweed, and you can get a hair test and find out what your mineral balance is so you can get it back to normal, so at least your body has half a chance to fight off some of this stuff, and you can eat as well as you possibly can and as organic as you possibly can. But 3 to 10% of the population, like me, are just not going to be able to function in civilization, really, anyway. And the rest of the people don't know why they feel vaguely sick, you know. And so, you know, I am so looking for people with a solution, but I don't really see any solution except turning it off. Now, I realize that you may think I'm an extremist here, but I'm really not. I'm a pragmatist, okay? And what I see is that very, very slowly, after a whole bunch of horrible damage has been done, maybe we'll regulate it mildly. And then it'll be so cool that the kids will think that they have to have it because it's banned. You know, the kids at the community school here in Mendocino used to take 3 or 4 Wi-Fi hubs, put them in a circle, point them inward, turn them on, and stand in the middle of it to get an effect like bad speed. Okay,
so
I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah, that's fine. I appreciate your comments.
There's a huge problem here, yeah. And I would like to know, do you have any solutions?
We are going to discuss.
Yeah.
We are going to discuss some ways to protect yourself from this EMF.
What about the people who aren't just theoretically involved, but the people like me, and worse, the people who are hiding out in canyons in Arizona, you know, in their campers, because they literally would have a heart attack or a stroke or you know, die.
Yeah. Well,
these are scary things. So.
Okay. Appreciate your call. But rather than going on a crusade, which I can understand you feel very personally about, let's give us a moment to talk about some of the things that people can do to help themselves, and that will be more constructive than just damning the science, obviously, that's behind promoting it. Okay, so appreciate your call. Okay, so Dr. Pete.
I should mention that in Scandinavian countries, there are taking the ultra sensitivity to electromagnetism in a few people seriously, so mm-hmm. that they're protecting schools. If a student reacts to it, they're insulating the school or grounding the school to protect individuals who are super sensitive.
Yeah.
And are they doing that in the same way like we talked before with metal roofs and metal that connects the roof to the ground and the plumbing that's in the ground, metal plumbing?
Yeah, and even special paint that has a shielding effect.
Yeah. It's like anything else. It's a fairly new technology. I think if you talk about time, you know, it hasn't really been around for that long, and we are gathering data all the time, and the fact that there are negative effects coming out and released in scientific journals is obviously pushing the quest for more information forward. And I think, like I said halfway through the show, I think we're at the best alternative that we have at this point in time, and I think that's hopefully that's where the human species is going. If we're going to be smart enough to work this out, we just need to keep seeing the evidence that's there and open our eyes and start thinking about the alternatives. I know money is always a driver of the industry, but I think when enough evidence is brought to bear that people are getting sick, then I think there's enough political will to change things, and that hand in hand with industry will fuel the next generation. I want to quickly say that I pulled an article up, actually, just as we've been standing here, from the Journal of Borderland Research. And there was a little bit of experiments were done with a group of people to see whether or not they could perceive the ELF from about 7 to 10 hertz. And there was a definite proportion of the subjects who could definitely sense the ELF that they were receiving through the headphones, and so specific was it that took about a quarter of a second for them to react to the on or off switch, and there was nothing that they could physically hear or see, but their brains were definitely telling them that something was happening at that time. So that's pretty interesting what you said, Dr. Pete, about the schools in Sweden and what they're doing to shield the children. We do have another caller, I think, on the air, so let's...
we have to make it quick because we have to discuss some ways to help protect ourselves.
Okay, there we go.
I'll also briefly interject that there is a kind of police radar, speed radar, that I can detect. I found that out in a very interesting way, but it is possible. And here is our last caller of the evening, I assume?
Perhaps, yeah. Let's take the caller. Hi, you're on the air?
Hi. I wanted to make a comment about this documentary I watched recently called The Light Bulb Conspiracy. And it talked about something called the International Energy Cartel, which it shows documents like internal memos and stuff, how they controlled like how long household products last, like 1,000 hours for light bulbs and all this stuff. That's why, like, back in the day, things would last.
Right.
I wonder if that has anything to do with renewing the bad energy that they can give to things and whatnot. But I also get tension headaches from CFLs, and I say something to everybody I come across that has those in their home, especially a lot of them. It's crazy because they got, I guess, tax breaks from the government. It's like green energy stuff, mm-hmm. and you know, they're made overseas. They're all toxic. There's no waste disposal set up, so
sure.
My theory is that we're the waste disposal because you know, knocks people's IQ points down, keeps them from resisting and stuff like that against, I guess we call it New World Order. But anyways, I don't think it's about money, as one of your other callers talked about. I think it's really about power, because powerful people are the ones that control the money. And then basically my question is about directed energy weapons. Like, they use them against what they call riots, which are protests when people are conspiring against the world, that kind of a deal. And also the work of Nick Begich, who talks about the HARP project with all the radio antennas. Yep. They generate resonant frequencies and bounce off the ionosphere. I want to know if you knew a bit like that or about that. And I just wanted to finish the comment that it seems like a pretty high-level conspiracy against people like worldwide to, you know, expose them to these fields. And that's all I have to say.
Okay.
I'll hang up and listen to your response.
All right. Thank you for your call. I think... I think, Dr. Pete, what we'd like to do is really talk about what people can do to help themselves, and let's focus the last part of this show on positive things. I know you've written articles about the hormones testosterone and progesterone being very proactive and anti-inflammatory, and even for EMF and the free radical damage that can happen, it's certainly applicable.
Yeah, their deficiency is involved in all of the degenerative diseases, right. Heart disease, sudden death from heart stopping, Alzheimer's disease. They are deficient, and especially relative to the estrogen level. Men with Alzheimer's have high estrogen, low testosterone, and all kinds of injury, whether it's ionizing radiation or electromagnetic waves, longer waves and microwaves and so on, these all lower testosterone and progesterone.
And they all cause the cells to increase more estrogen and serotonin, right?
Yeah. And so it's not surprising that the radiation non-ionizing causes the same diseases that ionizing radiation does, because they're all affecting the same basic physiology, lowering our protective hormones.
And
one of the types of radiation I didn't mention was what they're using now in airport scanners. The ones that aren't X-rays are in the millimeter wavelength. And about 20, 30, 40 years ago, the Russians were working on the effects of those, which they're very useful for navigation and various communication purposes. But because they were starting to put them into practice, they studied the biological effects and found that wavelength is especially important in cell communication. And so, as with the other frequencies, the TSA is telling the public that that's a completely harmless level of radiation. And the energy level they're using in airports for those scanners are about 10 to 100 times higher than the Russian studies showed are involved in cell control and cell communication.
So if they, when you're standing in line to go through the security, if they tell you it's not an X-ray machine and it's like an ultrasound, that's what they told me, I just said, well, no thanks, I'd like to be patted down. But then they punish you. They make you wait a long time. And then they're also very rough when they pat you down.
They make you seem like a convict. Anti-patriotic.
Convict if you decide to decline the non-X-ray machine. Okay, so what about things in our home? So we can have our computers with the wireless switched off, plugged into plugs, and Ethernet cords for our computer internet service. We can hold cell phones if we have to talk on them away from our head as far as possible and shout loudly, or put it on a stand as far away as possible and shout loudly. Any other common practical recommendations for the unavoidable EMF that we're exposed to, Dr.
B? At this point.
Using the simplest older-fashioned technology like wires, yep, I think is very important, rather than the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. Even the Bluetooth is emitting enough to add to the biological confusion.
Well, you mentioned even if you put the little earpiece in your ear and it's connected to a wire to the actual cell phone, it would still be bringing some EMF, extra EMF to your brain.
Yeah. In fact, any metal in the environment is a potential source of re-radiated energy. When I was experimenting with making biological detectors, I hooked up my first detector to my finger and got a radio station coming out of my body, showing that I was resonating so strongly to that that I couldn't pick up the energy I was trying to detect.
Wow. Okay.
And foods, Dr. Pete, can you mention some foods that are EMF protective?
Things that are rich in magnesium help to stabilize cells, because all of the stresses, ionizing or non-ionizing radiation, fatigue and stress cells, cause them to take up and hold calcium, and that displaces magnesium. So if you have a magnesium-rich diet, a phosphate-poor diet, and avoid the polyunsaturated fats to lower stress and support the testosterone, progesterone, thyroid system, those foods offer considerable defense. Caffeine is helpful to the extent that it increases progesterone and testosterone and thyroid, for example, and helps with any kind of radiation resistance.
Right.
So in the herbal world, nettle tea is very rich in minerals, and raspberry leaf tea, any kind of green leaves, and in the vegetable world, you know, kale, chard, collards, those are all very, very magnesium-rich foods. Phosphate-poor foods, like you mentioned, Dr. Pete, are going to be milk and cheese and eggs. Eggs have quite a bit, but not.
And again, the greens.
And the greens, right? They're phosphate-poor.
The greens are good for you, aren't they? You see? They told you that when you were a child.
They don't have a lot of phosphorus in them.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Pete. Let's have a few minutes on the air just to tell people more about you or how they can get hold of your information. So thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And, again, it was another chance for people listening to get some valuable information. So thanks a lot.
Okay. Nice.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay. So for those of you who've listened to the show, Dr. Raymond Pete has a website, www.raypete.com. Lots of published articles that are scientifically referenced, so not just hearsay. They've been delving into this information for the last 40 years or so. So he's a research endocrinologist with a very big brain, and he's got a lot of information in there to share with people. So always pleased to have him on the show. Okay, so for other people that perhaps have listened to the show, we can be contacted Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 p.m. The toll-free number is 1-888-WBM-HERB. We can be reached for consultations via Dr. Pete through that number until December, the third week of December.
December 21st.
December the 21st. There we go. That's the winter equinox. So we've had two equinoxes on the show this year. Okay. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. I hope people get some valuable information and can benefit from it. Anyway, to those of you who have ears, let them hear.
My name is Sarah Murray.
My name is Andrew Murray. Good night.
Good night.
And support for Redwood Community Radio comes from Knox Manufacturing, a Humboldt County business making Harvest Excel automated canopy greenhouses locally. Designed for light deprivation and solar-powered, the Harvest Excel can be viewed at Sylvandale Gardens in the Meadows Business Park in Redway. More information can be found at harvestexcel.com. And support for KMUD comes in part from Golden Dragon Medicinal Syrup, an anti-inflammatory, antifungal, antibacterial, antioxidant medicine made without heat or ice. Golden Dragon Medicinal Syrup is organic, edible, topical, cosmetic, and water-soluble. Information is available at goldendragonmedicinalsyrup@gmail.com and by phone at 707-223-1569. Get ready to get funked up, because here comes Cousin Mark.
It is 8 o'clock and 57 degrees here in Redway, home of the greatest radio station on the planet. That's this one right here, Redwood Community Radio. KMUD Garberville, 91.1 FM. KMUE Eureka, Arcata, 88.1 FM. KLAI, Laytonville, 90.3 FM. And down in the cove at 99.5. Support for KMUD comes from listeners like you and from a fertile world on Pisanay and Eureka.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of Redwood Community Radio. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of KMUD or renewing if you've already joined. A regular yearly membership is $50, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.